for our first segment. The politics of immigration continue to roil the Western world, from the far corners of Europe to the U.S. southern border to here in New York City, where an influx of more than 140,000 migrants over the past year and a half or so has strained city services and cast doubt on whether our city still embraces its identity as a refuge for people from around the world. In the April print edition of The Independent, we have a fascinating article by Linda Martine Alcoff titled White Fright and a Changing World. Here's what keeps MAGA up at night. In her article, Alcoff writes, "We need to understand today's political crisis as epical, rather than merely current and caused most fundamentally by the slow demise of the modern colonial world system." Linda Martine Alcoff is a professor of philosophy at Hunter College and the CUNY Graduate Center. She is the author of numerous books, including The Future of Whiteness and Race and Racism, A Decolonial Approach, which will be released later this year. She joins us now on 99.5 FM. Linda, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, John. Happy to be here.
It's always great to have you with us. So before we dive into this subject matter, just to set the stage a little bit, can you tell us about your own experiences of race growing up in Melbourne, Florida in the 1960s, and then later as an anti-Klan activist in the South, and how that informs your work?
Well, I came to the United States as a young child and moved in with my white mother's family. My father is brown and mixed from Panama. So my sister and I had a kind of a rude awakening, as so many people do who come to the United States, and finding our identities changing, our value changing, certain aspects of our visible appearance becoming very important. I never took these things for granted. I never took identity for granted. My mother's family is very poor, poor white, and I love them very much, and they were really wonderful, but they, you know, had some old ideas, and the South was churning up as I came here in the 60s and 70s, and I felt a desire to be part of the effort to root out racism, anti-black racism in particular, but all forms of racism from the United States. And so I got involved, and the Klan was on the march in the late 70s or mid 70s. They were growing. They were increasing, kind of like what you see today with the far right sort of marching and getting more support and articulating their views and updating their views from previous old ideas and having an impact.
Right. And what, anything else you want to say about your activism in that era?
Well, it was scary and dangerous, but we were trying to find a way to make an alliance between people of color and white working class people. That was the goal of me and my comrades and a number of different groups and peoples working in the United States back then. And there were lots of grounds of that you could build from in terms of common interests, but it was a struggle.
Yeah, one of the perennial struggles in American history is those attempts to form multiracial alliances against the ruling class, as it were. And we see that today with the attempt to unionize the auto workers in the South that's really gaining momentum, but also facing more opposition. But let's go back and talk about that quote I read from a couple of minutes ago when I was introducing you about how today's political crisis around immigration is something that's epical and not a headline grabbing event of the moment. Can you elaborate on that analysis?
Yeah, I think it's a real mistake to date this from 2016 forward, right? When Trump emerged and actually took office. The right is no doubt organizing and gaining a lot of ground across Europe and North America. There's no doubt about it. But I think this is connected to an epochal change from the mid-50s. I start that article with a quote from Albert Camus in the late 40s, where he's expressing dismay at the fact that Europe's dominance and cultural dominance is on the wane. So I think that's the right framework to understand what's going on today, is the loss of Western dominance, the loss of Western faith, the loss of a sense of the legitimacy of Western dominance over the world. There's not only fighting back against Western dominance, there's also a fighting back against the narrative that the West invented science, invented philosophy, advanced political progress. Every year that becomes harder to maintain. It's never been really justifiable, but I think it's really losing its ability to control trade routes and financial markets and the public press and the discussions in the public sphere globally. It's losing its ability to control those things and to come out on top. And so I think what people are feeling as the crisis is real. The replacement theory gives an articulation of this, that white people are being replaced by immigrants. And I think we should take this very seriously, because there's a way in which it's true in the sense of what whiteness has meant, what white history have been told, what ideas people have about their lives and their families and their histories and the history of their coming to settle in this part of the world. All of these things are being very effectively challenged today and are losing ground and losing face and being replaced with different narratives and different histories, much more truthful, much more accurate, but it's creating a sense of anxiety and crisis. Where will I fit in this new world? Will I be respected? So the loss of dominance, what I find interesting is that the loss of domination is seen as a crisis. It's going to be unending war and chaos and disaster because the West has lost dominance, is losing dominance, and there's no going back from that. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be chaos and disaster.
Mm. Do you think that was reflected in sort of this very strong embrace of Israel after October 7th and the genocidal war they've unleashed on Gaza?
Yes, I think there's multiple reasons for that, but I think there's a way in which following Germany in this instance, addressing trying to appear to be addressing anti-Semitism in a serious way, provided a kind of moral alibi for Western dominance. I mean, remember, Germany is the richest country in Europe. Germany dominates the European Union. What right does Germany try to destroy Europe and pretty much destroy it itself have to rule Europe today? Its ability to position itself as the defender of the victims, of those that it victimized itself, is really key to its narrative of legitimacy. And I think similarly in the United States, there's a way in which Biden seems to believe, perhaps sincerely, that championing Zionism will be a moral card that showcases the United States as being on the right side of history. And of course, this is not believable to most of the world today, given what's happening.
Right. And closer to home, going back to your argument about sort of the changing cultural zeitgeist, I mean, a real inflection moment to me was when the New York Times came out with the 1619 project, and the right wing, it really freaked out and has really tried to repress the teaching of history anywhere in this country that they're able to have an impact.
Yes, I mean, I think we can make fun of Ron DeSantis all we want to, but he's a smart guy. He realizes that the curriculum of today's students is going to determine the politics of the next generation in this country. And so silencing the truth about our history, the complicated truth, because there's also great social movements of democracy and great social movements against racism in this country that have been influential around the world. But that's not the only story, and that those movements had to fight and risk their lives against the government and the government support for the paramilitaries that were operating throughout the country from the Reconstruction right after the Civil War forward. So I think that just to say one other thing about Israel, one of the things that's similar between the Zionist government in Israel and our own is a certain toleration of ethno-nationalism, that the only, and I think this is what the far right is really putting forward today in this country and in Europe, the only way to secure the safety of white people is to have white majority in power, or maybe even white exclusivity in power, or Christian exclusivity in power. So it's ethno-nationalism that's really sweeping. That's sweeping in India, throughout Europe, and throughout the U.S. And it is, and ethno-nationalism is what Zionism is based on. The only way to have safety for Jews against anti-Semites is to have a state in which only Jews have the right to politically participate. And I think that's a false claim, and it's a dangerous claim to spread as a way for the West to move forward in these multiracial times.
Indeed. You're listening to the Independent News Hour on WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm John Tarleton. I'm speaking with Linda Martine Alkoff, CUNY professor and author of The Future of Whiteness and Race and Racism, A Decolonial Approach. That book will be coming out later this year. She has an article in the current edition of The Independent called White Fright and a Changing World. If you would like to call in and join the conversation, call 212-209-2877. Again, that's 212-209-2877. We're going to have Linda on the air with us for a few more minutes, so join the conversation if you like. And Linda, bringing this discussion closer to home, we also have a situation here in New York City where we've seen competing responses to the influx of migrants. There are many people who've worked very hard to reach out and welcome them and try to assist them. And then we've had other figures, including our mayor, Eric Adams, and his right-wing media allies, like the New York Post, who have promoted a narrative of scarce resources being given to undeserving newcomers, as well as a narrative of danger and menace with the migrants. Can you talk about what we're seeing here in the city and how that relates to some of the things you've been discussing with us?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? New York, as they say, is really at risk of losing its identity as an immigrant city that has been welcoming, that has been so important, with the Statue of Liberty out in the bay representing the ideal of accepting not just immigrants but poor immigrants, right? That's been the narrative of New York and of the nation. And what's interesting right now is that how little this hysteria accords with the facts, because the crime that immigrants perpetrate is below the level of the general population. The fact is that the migrant explosion is going to on current estimates that I've seen, hand over $7 trillion to the U.S. economy. Unfortunately, will not be fairly distributed, but the point is our economy is going to benefit from the influx of immigrants. But these facts don't seem to matter and are not being shared by our political leadership, either the Democrats nationally or Eric Adams in the city.
Right. Emotions sometimes override logic. We have a caller on the line. A caller, can you give us your name and let us know where you're calling from and then your question for Linda Martine Alcoff?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Oh, hear you fine.
Oh, great. Okay, so my name is Leah. I'm calling from the Lower East Side. I want to push back a little about this idea that Israel is a white power. If you're a Jew, you know that we come in every racial color, combination, ethnicity. And I think that a lot of people have a lot to say, but I feel like if you've never been there, or even if you have been there, if you're from here and you think that Israel is a white state that's comparable with the European colonialism here, I think you're really not seeing through open eyes. I think that's a very United States perspective.
Okay.
Like our country has and I don't like the word race because it has no real scientific meaning, but for lack of a better word, our country sees through race or colorism. And every place is different. So I don't think that we can criticize places, but that really, those comments really feel to me like looking through a very United States perspective. And I think for white people right now to deal with what's happening here, and it's very easy to blame that on other people, and certainly Jews are always scapegoats. So I think that white Americans need to own their history and not blame it on Jews or Israel because it's inaccurate.
Okay, I really appreciate your questions and your comments on this. Let's give Linda Martine Alcoff a chance to respond. Linda, your thoughts. Are the Israelis being unfairly seen through a lens of colorism here?
Well, I agree in part in the sense that I don't think Jews are always seen as white. They're kind of like on the borderline, and sometimes they're on one side of the border and sometimes on the other side of the border, even in New York. I think the argument though that I've made and others have made does not necessarily hinge on the fact that Israel is seen as simply a white country and therefore gets special privileges from the U.S. because of its whiteness. There's other reasons that it gets special privileges that I listed, you know, about the sort of being on the moral, trying to present themselves on the moral high ground, present the U.S. and Germany presenting themselves on the moral high ground by supporting Israel. But the other thing that makes Israel really relevant here is the ethno-nationalism. So whether or not Israel is white, whether or not Israel accepts multiple ethnic geographical lineage of Jewish people there, it's still a form of ethno-nationalism in that you have to be Jewish in order to have rights to own land and rights to vote. And that model, the idea that only safety can be guaranteed if you have uniformity of identity, if you have shared religion, right? That's the same idea that the white Christian nationalists use today, both in Europe and the U.S. So that's a commonality. However we understand Jews and Jewish history and the multiplicity of Jews, ethno-nationalism is the key to Zionism, and it is accepted without enough debate in the global North today.
Right. We have to go here in one more minute, but just bringing it back to New York City, your thoughts on the fact that the scapegoating of the immigrants here is led by our mayor, who is a black man, who is at the same time appealing to anxieties felt by some working class blacks in the city, as well as some people from Latino communities who feel like the newly arriving immigrants, you know, are jumping the line, and those kind of feelings that he's stoking.
Right. I think that there are some legitimate issues that need to be talked about above board and worked out in terms of diverse segments of the working class and the way they're pitted against each other, and the way in which new, vulnerable, undocumented immigrants can bring down the wages of others. Those are issues that need to be worked through, because there are different segments of the working class that are made to compete, and we need to look at that structurally. And that's a legitimate issue. But scapegoating immigrants as the cause of our problems, as if without them things are going to be fine, is just not acceptable, whether it's from an African-American, an Asian-American, a Latinx person, or an indigenous person. We have to get more sophisticated about the way racism is an equal opportunity problem in every community, and every community has some racism against other groups that is a problem and that needs to be addressed.
Okay, well, we'll have to leave it there. But Linda Martine Alkoff, we thank you so much for joining us today on the Independent News Hour here on 99.5 FM.
It would be wonderful to have hi, Linda. This is Linda Perry here with John. It would be wonderful to have a longer conversation with you. I'd love to hear what you think of the Netanyahu government when you talk about Israel and Jews and what's going on in Palestine and so many other issues. Can I just ask you, what do you teach? What is your subject that you teach?
I teach critical race theory and feminist theory and decolonial theory.
Wonderful. That's wonderful.
I'm the enemy.
not our enemy, that's for sure.
No.
Not our enemy. But thank you so much. And it was really good hearing from you. And I'd love you to just be on some other time and have our listeners engage with you some more, because I know that people want to talk to you. So, John, if you don't mind, I just wanted to say that to Linda. So appreciate your thoughts. And, you know, yeah, there's a lot of anxiety and a lot of nervousness as white supremacists are losing their grasp. So thank you for bringing that to our audience.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed being here always.